Adventures in Research. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. A story entitled, The Place Where Time Begins. Our story has nothing at all to do with the beginning of the world, as you might be led by the title to think. But rather, it deals with the beginning of the day. You see, every day, time begins atop a small hill in Greenwich Park in England, the site of Greenwich Observatory.
For the last sound of the Greenwich time signal, it was exactly 12 o'clock, Greenwich Mean Time.
Midnight in London, England. 0 hours at Greenwich, longitude zero. Another day is officially beginning, for Greenwich Observatory is the starting place of the hours, a checkpoint against which to establish accurately the time of day anywhere in the world. Why, you might say, should it be Greenwich? Well, that's the story. And it takes us back through the years, back to Christopher Columbus, who dared to prove the world was round.
I know we have sailed for many long days, but weary though the crew may be, we cannot stop. Look here at the chart.
But, sir, there's no sight of land. And yet, according to the chart, we should have encountered land somewhere before this.
You see these islands here? They're in the Sea of China. Soon you shall see them, not on a chart, not on paper, but you shall see them in reality across the ship's rail.
But when? When? How long can we go on? Perhaps we're doomed. Perhaps we shall have to sail like this until the very day of judgment.
Let us turn back, Columbus. There will be no turning back. Sail on.
On across the endless waters, westward, always westward. And as we know, Columbus and his weary crew did sight land. Not the islands in the China Sea, but the Bahamas, 160 degrees of longitude away, over 10,000 miles from the place where Columbus thought himself to be. How did he come to make such an error? Well, in those days, you could always be pretty sure how far north or south you were by checking with the midday sun or with the polar star. But east and west, that was another matter. A matter of time. And Columbus had no clock. Many other men set out in exploration, hoping to gain new lands for their native countries. So many that necessity demanded a solution to the problem. One man came close, a famous seeker for the secrets of the stars. You've heard his name, for he was one of the first of men to see the skies by telescope, Galileo.
I am flattered that you call on me. You say you are the master of a sailing ship.
That I am. She is the Santa del Flora. I have heard it said that you have a machine of some sort that calculates a ship's direction at sea.
I'm afraid that, like all rumors, the one you heard was an exaggeration of the truth.
You mean you do not have one?
I am an astronomer, Captain, and a philosopher. I have been fortunate in being able to obtain an instrument through which to see the stars magnified.
Yes, yes, but all I want...
It brings them very close to me. Among my observations with the instrument, I have found the planet Jupiter to have a number of moons surrounding it. I've also observed that these moons rotate about the planet slowly and regularly. The first one disappearing behind the planet, later to emerge from the opposite side, and then another and another, and so on, repeating the cycle.
What has Jupiter and its moons to
now,
do with this?
Now, since it takes a specific length of time for each moon to disappear and reappear, it occurs to me that the master of a ship might, with the aid of my magnifying instrument, observe the moons carefully and from them have an unerring source of correct time. Being a navigator yourself, you must know, of course, that all you need to establish your distance from your point of departure to where you are at sea is to know what time it is and how fast you are traveling.
Why, yes. Yes, you're right. Tell the time by Jupiter's moons. How can I get such an instrument?
You might say Galileo had made a sail, for the captain was greatly intrigued. And when he put to sea on his next voyage, a brand new telescope was mounted on the bridge of his vessel. But Galileo had failed to reckon with one thing.
What kind of navigator are you? Try it again. Next voyage, I'll have a new mate.
But, Captain, I tell you, it's impossible.
All you need to do is keep watching one of Jupiter's moons. What's wrong with your eyes, man? Can't you see it?
Yes, sir. I see them all. And then the ship rolls, and I see them double. And then it pitches, and I see them leap and bounce. When your man Galileo made his observations, he was on dry land.
Just keep your eye on the moon and forget the excuses. Now, try it again.
Try as they might, it soon became evident that the unsteady deck of a ship was no place for accurate observations by telescope. Theoretically sound, though Galileo's plan may have been, in practice it failed to solve the problem. And men continued to wander, to flounder over the sea. It was about 1675 that the problem found its way into the royal mind of England's King Charles II. A mind that, incidentally, had a scientific turn.
Now, King Charles, about the costly delays our spice ships have suffered.
Baron, I've watched the moon on many clear nights from the castle ramparts. I think there might be something in that theory I have heard.
Theory? Theory? Which one was that, my lord?
The motion of the moon. Since first we came out here tonight, it has gone from there, just above the horizon, to there, about half the distance to the top of the sky.
But, my lord, what is that to do with the delay of our spice ships?
You said yourself, Baron, it is a matter of navigation.
I did and did.
They lose their way. They go out of their way. They sail east to an island, pass the island in the fog, miscalculate and keep on sailing east, thinking still to reach it. Days, weeks, months lost because of it. Because of a problem that the moon, that moon right up there, might solve for us.
You mean, my lord, that is the theory?
There are some men of science who have noticed with what regularity the moon travels among the stars, just as we've seen it traveling tonight. There is a belief that if a table could be drawn up, setting the moon's distance from a number of motionless stars at definite periods, the navigator of a ship would have a certain method of telling time, and therefore know his easterly or westerly position at sea.
It does sound possible.
How would you know, Baron?
Well, my lord, I only meant, though I'm no scientist...
But there are scientists in the kingdom, and we shall put the problem up to them. Perhaps the idea is a sound one.
Immediately, King Charles began to act. And encouraged by the scientific men of the realm, he summoned, at their suggestion, a young man of 29, whose interest in astronomy had led him to search the heavens with the interest of a Galileo.
Come, sit down here, John. That is your name, is it not?
Yes, Your Highness. John Flamsteed.
As I was about to say, you are aware of the problem, the theory?
I am. They told me at the Royal Society.
Well, what do you think of it?
Well, it's worthy, but it is predicated on the motionless stars. And it present, sire, there's no reliable table of fixed stars in existence. We should have to have one before we could use the plan for our purpose.
No table of stars, eh? Then we'll get one. You will get one.
I, your highness?
Yes. You could make one, couldn't you? I've been told you have already catalogued over 70 stars, calculated their positions. Therefore, I appoint you Astronomer Royal, and your salary shall be £100 a year.
But, your highness...
You'll need a place from which to make your observations. I've the place in mind. Ideal. Slight hill. Yes, Greenwich will do nicely. I think, John Flamstead, we shall build you a royal observatory at Greenwich.
And that's how Greenwich became the site of England's famous observatory. A place for the first Astronomer Royal to do his research. Research into the habits of the stars and the moon. King Charles had the eminent architect, Sir Christopher Wren, build it for John Flamsteed. And year after year, John Flamsteed peered at the heavens through inadequate instruments. Year after year, he charted the skies. And by the time 13 years had passed, his observations numbered over 20,000. But still, the sailors had no chart. Flamsteed steadfastly refused to publish his findings. One day, he had an important visitor.
Sir Isaac Newton. This is a pleasure. Won't you come in, please?
Thank you, Flamsteed.
Here, let me take your hat.
Thank you. No, I won't be long. I don't like to seem malicious, John, but we've discussed this matter of your celestial findings several times before. I mean about the publishing of them.
And I've told you repeatedly, Sir Isaac, when my findings are complete and I have checked the accuracy of them, then I shall be happy to publish them.
The Royal Society loaned money to you for your instruments, and we feel we are entitled...
The Royal Society has been very kind, Sir Isaac, and I am deeply grateful. I'm also aware that accuracy is necessary before I make my findings public. I cannot hurry the heavens, Sir Isaac. And until I have thoroughly established the position of the stars in the changing skies, I will not publish. That is all, sir.
Very well. We shall see. I am sure the Society and the King will take a much different attitude than you. Good day.
The attitude of the Royal Society was different. And forcing surrender of the compilations, they published 400 copies. 3/4 of them, John Flamsteed managed to get back.
I'll burn them. I'll burn every one of them I get as a sacrifice to heavenly truth.
And he did. John Flamsteed burned all 300 that he could get his hands on. For with no time to check, his calculations were full of errors. Then Flamsteed died, and Edmund Halley, for whom the famous comet is named, took his place as Astronomer Royal to carry on the quest for scientific knowledge of the stars' positions. And the observatory at Greenwich grew. New and finer instruments were installed by the British government. But not until 1811, 136 years after King Charles put the problem up to science, were the final findings of the Royal Observatory published as the nautical almanac for sailors to use. And today, many a man looks to the stars for his direction in sail or in flight, and knows his position east or west, thanks to this star-filled adventure in research. And that's today's story by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Join us again next week for another transcribed story by Dr. Thomas on Adventures in Research.